ABC Radio Darwin.
Now, there are some stories that just need to be told. The universe finds a way of edging these stories towards the surface, towards taking a breath of air. And once those ripples are made and have been felt, the story is ready to speak. But what if that story is actually a secret and one that has remained untold for close to 50 years? This was a decision process author Anne Connor had to go through, but she's come out on the other side with a memoir in hand. Morning, Anne.
Good morning, Jess.
Now, congratulations on your memoir, Two Generations.
Thank you very much.
What's it about?
Well, it's about intergenerational trauma, basically. It's about many things. It's about forgiveness. It's about secrets. It's about hope. It's about redemption. And it, the crux of it is that 20 years after my father died, he was a soldier who was based in Darwin during the bombings. And then later he was shipped to Lae, to the Buriboom River in New Guinea. And whilst he was in Lae, he was involved in a tragic accident where his Owen semi-automatic gun accidentally discharged, shooting a young soldier in front of him, a young 22-year-old soldier in front of him. And that was the secret that we found out 20 years after he died. And so Two Generations is about, well, first of all, I didn't want to even look at that, to be honest. I wanted to write about Darwin. And in 2012, I came to Darwin to attend the 70th commemoration of the bombing. And I accidentally came across a launch of a book by Peter Gross called An Awkward Truth. And in that book launch, during that book launch, there was a short reenactment of the bombing of Darwin and what transpired there. And whilst I was looking at that, my thoughts kept landing in the same place. Well, why don't I know about this? Why don't other Australians know about this? And my research brought up that Darwin had been bombed nearly 65 times and the north of Australia had been bombed over 100 times. And every revelation I came across, I was shocked. So that's what I thought my story was about. But then this secret, my father's secret, kept popping up. And I thought, well, how can I write his story without this? And I didn't want to touch the secret because, as secrets usually are, they're deep, dark secrets, and that's why they're secrets. But as I unpacked it and when I looked at it, I thought, well, this is quite remarkable. This man went through a traumatic experience with no support from the army that people have now. It was clear that he was suffering from post-traumatic stress disorder as a husband and father on his return. His medical record showed that he had been he had 22 admissions to hospital in Australia and New Guinea before being discharged mentally unfit in March 1945, with a court-martial still pending. So he was never forgiven by the army. So I looked at this secret, and as I unpacked it, I thought, well, this is pretty remarkable that my parents were able to live with this secret. My mother knew, and she kept it until just before she died in her early 90s. So when I looked at that, I thought, well, this is quite remarkable, and my parents are quite remarkable. So that's what I wanted to paint it. I wanted to take the darkness away from it and shine some light on it and think that, you know, my father was a victim of war for no as an accident. And he lived with that. And there was no doubt about it that he was a depressed man. He was quite emotionally withdrawn at times. But as we all are, he was multifaceted, and there were times when he was very happy and loving and kind. And so that's the position, that's the portrait I wanted to paint of him without any rose-coloured glasses, seeing him for what he was. And I think seeing him for what he was makes him all the more remarkable. So that's what Two Generations is about.
Wow, that's a very remarkable story and an enormous story to have the responsibility of telling.
Mm.
How did you actually find out about your dad's secret?
Well, that was also an accident. One of my brothers attended an Anzac Day gathering in Melbourne in 1991, I think. Yes, 1991. And he was introduced to the men of my father's regiment, the 2nd 14th Australian Field Regiment, and one fellow blurted it out.
Just there and then?
There and then. He said something to the gist was, I was there when Jock shot blah, blah. And then he went on to say how it happened that the gun discharged, and it was an inspection of arms, so they're all lined up, and that's how it happened. So my brother was very traumatised by that, and he still finds it difficult to talk about. He gets very emotional to talk about it. And so he told us all, and we sort of just sat with it for 20 years and until I started writing Two Generations. And the title Two Generations came about from the quote, it can take six generations for trauma to work its way out of a family. It's anonymous. I don't know who had said that, but I have heard it, probably because it resonates with me, and you often hear things that resonate with you. So hence Two Generations. This is my father and me, and I don't know how long it will resonate within our family.
Has your family read the book?
I sent an early draft to all my siblings, and because I said, this is what I'm doing. That was an early draft, and it was rough, but it was the gist of the story. The manuscript's been, there was 65 drafts or something like that. I've lost count of the drafts. So the manuscript is more polished and it's more tweaked, and I've had editors look at it. But the gist is the same. And so I needed to let them know that this is what I'm writing about, and I've only had support from them.
What experiences had your father shared with you about the war?
Very little, Jess. He spoke a bit about Darwin, but he spoke in terms of that they were taught to shake their boots out before they put them on because of spiders and scorpions. And he got malaria. I'm not sure whether he got malaria in Darwin or Lae in New Guinea, but he had malaria would come back as the disease does. You can get sort of flashbacks with malaria. But it wasn't spoken about. But I do remember one time, and I've written about this in Two Generations, that I was with my dad, and it was just the two of us in a lounge room. And I obviously, it was a mellow mood. He was in a good mood. So I asked him, Dad, have you shot anyone in the war? I don't know why I asked him. I don't know what was going around my 8, 10, 12-year-old self to ask that question. Was it Anzac Day? I don't know. I just remember this. And he was silent for a while. And silence with my father could be two things. You know, he could be just be silent, or he could be moody, or he could, you know, lash out and say, be angry with me. And he was silent. And he said to me, you shouldn't ask anyone that, because they may have and they don't want to talk about it. Now, that stuck in my mind. And so it was a very measured and thought out comment to a little girl asking that question. So, no, he didn't talk much. But veterans don't. Even modern day veterans don't talk much about it. So it sort of comes with the parcel, really.
Well, yeah, I mean, the things that they have seen and experienced are often, you know, hard to communicate to those of us who haven't been in that space.
Yes.
You mentioned your mother knew about what had happened. So how was your parents' relationship?
Well, I think as we were growing up, I don't know. You know, I was the youngest of five children. I wasn't interested in my parents' relationship. They got on. They had a few arguments. But there was never any you know, blow-ups or violence or anything like that. But then as they got older, I mean, you know, we were a very sort of working class poor family, and my parents went out to work and we came home, and you know, it was just you don't think about your parents' relationship when you're little. But as they got older, they sort of became a bit more affectionate towards one another. You know, they started walking arm in arm and holding hands and spending a lot more time with one another. And I suppose it was the pressure of not having, after my father retired, not having to work and not having five kids around the house. And so it was quite lovely. But another tick for my dad, I suppose, was that in my research, I found that a lot of returned veterans who had been involved in traumatic experiences were either violent, they drank, they gambled, some men just cleared off. They couldn't handle the intimacy or the responsibility of family life. But my father didn't do any of those. We got smacks and by my mum and my dad as a form of discipline, which you did in those days. But, you know, there was never any of that. So there was, and I think that's quite remarkable that he sort of managed his trauma in a way. He put a lot of, had a lot of belief in his religion, his Catholic religion. So I think Catholicism helped him a lot. He was the president of the St. Vincent de Paul Society, and he'd visit poor families and take boxes of food. He visited prisoners in Pentridge, which is a jail in Melbourne, a well-known jail in Melbourne. He was very good mates with the priest of Pentridge, Father John Brosnan. So I think he put a lot of his effort into helping people and not judging people and understanding people. So I think that's how he coped.
My name's Jess Ong. You're on ABC Radio Darwin and the Northern Territory, and I'm talking to author Anne Connors about her memoir, Two Generations, which is being released in April this year. And you've got an excerpt to read,
yes,
which is about Darwin itself.
That's right. Now, this takes place on the morning of the 19th of February 1942. And apparently in my father's regiment, there was a billabong that they used to go to and swim and wash their clothes. So this, on the morning of the 19th, I've got the Jock and his fellow soldiers going to the billabong. As Jock had floated on his own in the billabong that morning, dreaming of happier times with Bess and joking with his mates, four Japanese fighter ships dropped anchor 236 miles off the coast. Zeros, Vels and Kates hovered over flight decks. Engines roared, deafening. Propellers turned gradually at first, rotating at full speed within seconds. One by one they took off, wheels folded. That morning sun gleamed on shiny wings. They gathered into formations and headed for their targets, with their commander, Captain Mitsuo Fukida's orders ringing in their ears, "Kill anything that moves."
That's very descriptive, Anne. Thank you for sharing that excerpt from the book.
Now, my pleasure.
Did your dad's revelation make things make sense for you upon looking back?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It made sense. I realised there was a thing with my dad, which I still live with, is loud noises. And if there was a loud noise, he would react angrily. And he reacted a couple of times in my life. And I write about this in the book. Once slamming a closed door, and another time when I was practicing my Irish dancing steps. Another time when I won a race at our school, and there was a starter gun. So the starter gun obviously disturbed him. And I was very confused by that because I won this race, and yet my parents were a bit distant and they left. So there was those things that happened to me that I couldn't make sense of as a little girl. But now, of course, they make sense to me now.
Did your mum, who knew about your dad's secret, did she find out before she passed that you actually knew?
She did. One of my other brothers, I have three, he recorded her before she died. She was in her 90s, and it came out that this had happened, this accident happened, and her emotion was raw, as if it happened yesterday. And she didn't want his children, their children, to know, because I think she felt that we would feel ashamed of our father, where it was completely different. And my brother did a really good job of helping her through that, but it was raw. It was like it happened yesterday. So she carried this secret with her all through their marriage, as loyalty to him.
And that would have been an intense burden, I'm sure.
Absolutely, Jess. Absolutely.
Maintain that,
and you know, in their darkest times in marriage, you know, she kept it. You know, she kept it. I never witnessed any blurting of it, or you're like this because of like this, that can happen in relationship. I didn't hear any of that. So, and I think my mum grounded him. I think she, you know, she was probably his anchor a lot too. She was quite a strong woman. So I think the success is due to both of them.
Was writing this book cathartic for you?
Oh, God, yeah, I wet buckets. It was cathartic, and I kept putting it away. I didn't want to do it, but it got its teeth into me. And I felt phony if I didn't do it. And one draft, I didn't even use my parents' names. I used somebody else's names. But I just thought, this isn't authentic. I don't like this. So, yes, it was difficult, but it's a good process to go through. Because you come out the other end, and I say this to people who are dealing with a deep, dark secret that you don't want to deal with. You know, deal with it, even if you have to find a professional who will help you with that. Because what I found is that I came out with gold nuggets, and I was able to discard the fool's gold that we hang on to when we're exposed to something like this. So, yeah, it was a hard, difficult, good thing to do.
ABC Radio Darwin.